please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide, from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the NWO, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance in WCW. He is the games master, the taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Great, my man. How are you, JP?
I'm doing good. All right, the topic at hand today, NWA Great American Bash 1988, Baltimore, Maryland, at the Baltimore Arena, in front of about 14,000 people, big crowd here. Pay-per-view buys estimated somewhere around 190K. I don't know if that's actually accurate or not, but that's pretty damn good for NWA and JCP. And, of course, the tagline is the price for freedom here, July 10th, 1988. You're there. What's your role? Are you just a wrestler, or are you part of the booking committee with Dusty as well?
What year was that?
1988.
Well, I had been in the office for Crockett. So if I was, yeah, I think I had a little input from, me and JJ were the assistants. So I think I might have had a little input, but not much when he worked with us. You know what I mean?
Yep. When you look at this show, this will technically be the last pay-per-view for the National Wrestling Alliance and really the last NWA event presented by JCP, a.k.a. Jim Crockett Promotions. Does that mean anything, like, as far as historical significance in your mind, or is it just, Turner's buying us and we're going to, we're moving on up?
No, at the time it didn't, but as you just pointed out, it was the last dying vestment of the NWA, which had been in business since 1948.
Really, 1988, JCP's really last year. They're on the verge of bankruptcy. Ted Turner buys them, creates World Championship Wrestling. They're born and they're bred, and a Starrcade 88 would be really the first pay-per-view by WCW, although they still called it an NWA event. So JCP as far as you were concerned, are you like, I don't know, like, are you getting paid like an employee from them and then you have to go to Turner? Like, how does that work for you?
Yeah, I got paid for the going, you know, what my position on the cards. Then I got paid a salary for being assistant with James Dillon and, you know, for Dusty.
Were you worried at all about the bankruptcy? Like thinking like, oh man, like I'm going to lose a paycheck here. Or you knew Turner's taking over. You're not worried at all.
Well, I knew if Turner was taking over, and I had become friends with the guy that was the acquisition guy, who later really helped me years later. Can't even right now. It just jumped out of my mind. His name, very nice guy, and he told me what was going to happen. You know, we're going to have contracts, and we were going to have, you know, a paycheck every week and things like that. So I was all for that.
When you look at the end of JCP, sad kind of looking back. You think like something could have been averted? Maybe the planes. Like, what do you think about the end of JCP?
I'm going to ask you a question. I hate to bring up this conspiracy shit, okay? I really do. It's fucking ridiculous. You're an accountant, and you're supposed to be the head accountant of a very successful company, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least this, bringing you massive amounts of money. The most your company's ever had. How do you let it get $2 million in debt and no way to pay it off quickly and not say anything?
True.
I mean, how does that happen? You know, you're the head accountant. I'm sure. I don't know how many accountants they had, but I know he wasn't the only one, right? You would think someone would go up to him and say, hey, don't you see, debit and credit? You know, I mean, don't you see we're in trouble here? No, we're going to be okay. I never understood that. The plane thing was ridiculous. I told you, they used to go to Greenville, right? And I was always had a seat in the plane, and I wouldn't go because I would leave later than the plane would, or maybe not later than the plane would, approximately the same time. But I get home earlier than they would because, you know, fooling around, stopping to get what they had to get and getting to the plane in the last match was 90 miles, 90 miles.
Just drive. Yep.
What? I don't understand it. So, Jimmy wasn't paying. None of them were paying attention because they could never have thought that that was going to fold because of the money they were bringing in.
Do you think that stuff outside of it, like forget about all that stuff, because obviously that led to the bankruptcy and led to the end of JCP. But just because of WWF's dominance, do you think that JCP could have, you know, had the success? Or do you think that it went the way it was always going to go?
They had a great foothold, meaning Jimmy Crockett. If they had not done some silly things like moving the company to Texas, right? Buying Central States. Because it meant nothing. Raping and pillaging Florida and then buying it and then trying to run it completely different. They did, you know, buying Watts's office in Dallas. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking.
lot of wasted money for sure. And obviously with WCW, I mean, you could be a viable number two, but it just seemed like JCP, too many mistakes to hang around.
Right.
So they hang him up, and Ted Turner will be soon, to be coming. Obviously, Starrcade 88 will be WCW's real first pay-per-view, but this will be the last for JCP. Like I said, 190K supposedly is the buy rate, so not bad. So it's not like, they were dying off a slow death. I mean, decent on the pay-per-view buy for sure.
Right.
So the main event, a dark match, if you will, is Rick Steiner and Dick Murdoch defeating Kendall Windham and Tim Horner in about 4 minutes, 30 seconds. That's not a part of the pay-per-view, just kind of the main event dark match, if you will, just like the pre-show little match. Nothing really to write home about here, but it's just interesting that Ricky Steiner is on there, and his name obviously keeps popping up in the news lately, unfortunately for him. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Saw that today. Yeah.
So the one thing I didn't get about that was with Rick Steiner. So they said you have 24 hours to do something, and if you don't do it, we're taking you off. Otherwise, you're allowed on it. If you do something within 24 hours, what was that about?
I don't know, but what I saw today was he's off.
Yeah, it was something like he had to issue an apology within 24 hours or something, and they never got the apology.
I mean, I have no idea what went on. I know what they said happened, but I mean, I happened to be there in L.A. at that day, but I never saw anything. We were way away from one another. He was I was in the front of the building, and he was way away from me. So I don't know what happened, but they made a big deal about firing him and not going to ever use him, and then they invite him back.
Yeah. Very interesting, because Tony Hunter was booking both Steiner brothers, and obviously it's Detroit, Michigan, like kind of the home of the Steiner brothers there. So he's bringing them back in for WrestleCon. They were promoted. They were coming in. And then all of a sudden, High Spots had said that who runs WrestleCon, if anybody doesn't know that, basically was like, nope, we rethought it, and he's not allowed in. I guess there was a public backlash or something. There was something negative said about him being brought back in.
Oh, yeah. I saw the... there was a huge backlash, A huge backlash. And I was surprised. Not that I have any dog in this race, and I really like Rick. I don't understand, if you fired him, made a big deal of it, why you invited him back. You had to know what was going to happen, right?
Right.
I mean, am I right that you
have? No, I totally agree. Yeah, I thought that was weird too. I'm like, oh, wow, he's back. Okay, he's back at part of WrestleCon. Like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. After they made the big stink about how he's not allowed back. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that was kind of weird too, because it's like there's no second chances anymore for anybody. Like, that's it. And I don't even know if what he did or didn't do, if it's actually 100% accurate or whatever. I don't really care if they have the proof, they don't have the proof. I'm just saying, like, let's say he did it. Are we allowed to have second chances or no?
Yeah, and I mean, I never got a clear what happened. I know he said allegedly said some things, but the person that came by more than once, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, nobody ever had to me. I mean, nobody should bully somebody about how their lifestyle is, but I never really got a clear story. Did you ever? I mean, I know there was some statements made by Rick, but I never got. Somebody come up to him that ran the show or represented the company running the show and said, "Hey, calm down, blah blah blah. You need an apology." I never heard. It was almost like you heard. It was almost like you're putting a puzzle together. You didn't know what really transpired, I thought.
I'm still unsure of it as well. I'm not really sure exactly what happened, but obviously if he's bullying or doing that kind of stuff, obviously, I mean, you can't stand for that. You can't have any of that sort of stuff. But we never really got a clear, what did he say, all that other stuff. And did he apologize? Did he not apologize? Does he have to do a public apology? We kind of looking for more answers than we have. Well, we're looking for more questions than we have answers, I guess.
Right. So who knows?
So Ricky Steiner will not be at WrestleCon this year, as previously we thought he was. But moving back to the pay-per-view, the first match of Great American Bash 88 is a National Wrestling Alliance World Tag Team Championship match. The NWA World Tag Team Champions Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard with the aforementioned James J. Dillon fight Nikita Koloff and Sting in a pretty damn good match here. They go to a 20-minute time limit draw. What do you think about Arn and Tully versus Sting and Nikita going to a 20-minute time limit draw to start the show?
I don't like it.
No, why not?
Going to a draw?
To start the show?
Yeah. I mean, those were big names. You could have done anything with that. You know, that was an open slate.
Do you want Sting and Nikita as tag champs, though, or no?
I didn't say that. I mean, you could dump a lot of heat on Arn and Tully. You could start a little angle. You could start a big angle.
Yeah.
That there was something happened during the finish that was a little etchy-catchy, and one of them took opposition to how it happened. I mean, there's a storyline. You know, or if you wanted to beat the heels, which I wouldn't have done, because Arn and Tully were fabulous, and Nikita and Sting were great singles. I mean, there was so much you could have done rather than going through 20 minutes.
Do you like... or do you not like that it's the first match in a 20-time limit draw, or do you not like it because it's on pay-per-view that it's a 20-minute time limit draw?
I don't like it that it's on pay-per-view and it's a 20-minute time limit. And I also don't like it that you have four of your top guys, your top tag team, and two guys that you're using on top every night, and you can't come up with something to have people talk about. And I understand when you're under the pressure of producing these all the time, sometimes it's easy to go the least resistance. But with this one, I think, as smart as Dusty was, he could have came up with a finish that caused a little rift between Sting and Koloff.
For sure. And the thing is here, Sting is over like Rubby. He is like super duper over here. So he puts Tully in the Scorpion Deathlock, and as he's about to win, the time limit expires. So, I mean, you did put some major heat on Arn and Tully, and the finish really with Sting almost winning it. But like you said, you just don't like it, so how it goes to a draw.
Yeah. And it's kind of a blueprint, you know, that when you have these kind of matches and you need to draw, the guy puts a Scorpion Deathlock on, or Harley's pinning Superstar 1-2 and the bell rings. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you think about Sting at this point in 88 here? I mean, we're talking about July of 88, but are you thinking he's so over? He's probably the most over guy on the roster if you really look at it. Are you thinking world title picture ready for him, or is he too green at this point? You got to get him amped up a little bit.
I mean, this was Dusty's, you know, book, but I think Dusty saw him as a future contender, if not the champion.
Would it be crazy just like to say we got to push him, give him the title right away, or is that something you got to wait? You have to be, as a booker, you got to be patient.
Yeah, you can't push him all the way. I mean, let's go back to the Ultimate Warrior. how was a guy so over that he replaced Hogan, and when he replaced Hogan, he didn't draw?
Interesting. How does that work? It obviously happened, but how does that happen?
The holes were humongous. He was very limited. You know?
What about Sting, though? Sting wasn't as limited as Warrior.
At that time, he wasn't... When did he have his first Clash of the Champions with Rick?
So it was, I believe, a few months before this show. So it was 88, but yeah.
You remember that match?
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, 45. Flair carries him for 45 minutes, though.
Yeah, he was gassed for 30 minutes of it.
Right. Yeah, Flair is leading him. Yeah, big time.
Yeah, I mean, big time leading him. No disrespect. He was a young boy. But Rick was leading them. He was gassed out of his max. How could he? Okay, now let's go into a fictitious scenario. Now it's Sting versus a heel they got over with limited ability. Nikita. This is no disrespect to Nikita, but he was a young boy too, right? They're going to go, they got an hour time limit, and they got to go 40, 45 minutes. How do you think that match would have been?
Yeah, right, probably the same. Yeah, he's still green, probably can't do it either.
It would have sucked.
Yeah.
It would have sucked. Yeah. So, no disrespect, but, you know, you can't play in the NFL if you didn't play in college. Normally, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You have to have some kind of experience, and I don't think that Sting would have been ready for that. And I think the same thing would have happened with him that happened to the Ultimate Warrior. The holes were gaping, and people were saw through it very early.
And 2 years later, just about, Great American Bash 1990, Sting does win his first title, and he beats Ric Flair for the title. But at that point, obviously, he's much better, and he is ready. And obviously, as people would know, Sting was obviously a lot better in the ring than the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, that's just obvious.
Right, but he was working with Rick. He was working with everybody to get him there. You know what I mean? It was 2 years of going to college, so...
Yep.
He's done an amazing career. Amazing.
Another interesting thing about this match in particular, Nikita Koloff comes back, and he was at Bunkhouse Stampede 88. He's bald. He comes here, and he's got the full hair, and he's got the flat top. That doesn't seem very Nikita Koloff-like with the flat top. Was that weird or different, or does he have to get that approved? Why the hell did he come back with the flat top?
I have no idea, but doesn't fit the character to me.
Right? I mean, he still looks big. He still looks intimidating, but it just looks weird. He almost looks like a cartoon version of himself, like with the hair rather than the bald head and the goatee, you know?
Yeah. Something was different about his life, you know what I mean?
Mm. Does that have to be approved, like from you guys, from the booking team? Like, hey, I'm going to come back with a different look.
I think, you know, it would have to be approved by Dusty, I would think. You know, Dusty, I'm sure Dusty wasn't happy. I'm not sure. I can't say that. I would think that Dusty wouldn't have been happy with that. I mean, he had, you know, been very successful with the bald head. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking.
Not that it's like a completely different look, but I mean, different gimmick. It's similar gimmick, but obviously it's a different look. But it's almost like when superstar Billy Graham was doing that karate gimmick. It's like, what the hell? What does he think? You know what I mean? What are you doing?
Yeah, that was the worst gimmick of all times, what superstar did.
Also, I got to note the announce team, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, which is a great duo. Pretty funny. They're both still around today and still announcing for AEW. So just an interesting little side note that Schiavone and Ross, your two buddies, are still hanging and banging here at the announce team.
Right.
This match was kind of interesting just for the ending. So Nikita and Sting actually thought they won the tag titles. They're celebrating. Then Gary Michael Capetta says it is a 20-minute time limit draw. So, again, that gets the crowd hyped. And then, boom, kind of tells them it's the draw.
Yeah.
So as far as the next match is concerned, it's an NWA United States Tag Team Championship. So do you like having two different tag team titles? You got the U.S. title belts and the regular NWA tag team title belts.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Does it justify that, though, having two different tag team championships? Like, is there enough teams? Is there enough talent? Do you think it justifies it?
Absolutely. They, going back to the early 50s, on the national product that was coming out of Chicago, right? Lou Thesz was the was the world champion, and Vern Gagne was the U.S. champion.
Yep.
Why not? If you have all those guys. Plus, you got to remember why they were doing it. They had two and three towns a night running. You had to have a main event or a semi-main event with a tag match that meant something.
That is true. I didn't even think about that. I was thinking, like, do you really? I mean, I love the U.S. tag titles. I even love the presentation, the look of it. But I always thought, it's like, yeah, that's true. If they're running different towns, you want to say, hey, the tag team titles are on the line here. Right. It's town A, town B, vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is
at that time they were running minimum of two, sometimes three, and occasionally a fourth one.
Wow, really? Four?
A small one, a small town. A real spot show, you know what I mean? Like I know at one time there was three towns running, and Jimmy Valiant and Ivan Koloff were on the main event of the third town. And I loved to be on them because I was always in a good spot, you know, right below them. And they were drawing big, you know what I mean? And they didn't have all the stars on that show, but Ivan and Jimmy were drawing huge money, you know. And there were nice towns. There were Panama City. What's the one on the coast? Myrtle Beach. And then there's another town by there, too. There were nice towns you could go over and enjoy yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then when I said the fourth town, that was very rare. But what it was usually is some kind of spot show that was bought. Someone paid for it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it would help out for publicity. So they use the great George Souths of the world and maybe put Pistol Pez Watley, who was over on their TV against George South and a couple of other guys, you know, maybe guys that were just coming in or just getting ready to leave. So it was more of goodwill running the fourth town. And it didn't happen much, but the third town, yeah, it happened a lot.
Maybe throw in your buddy, the Italian Stallion, Gary Sabo. Maybe throw him out there, right?
Yeah.
So this is an NWA United States Tag Team Championship match. The NWA Tag Team, U.S. Tag Team Champions are the Fantastics, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers. They're going to be wrestling the Midnight Express, Beautiful Bobby, and Sweet Stan with the manager, Jim Cornette, James E. Cornette. If the Midnights lose, if the Fantastics win, Jim Cornette will receive 10 lashes. That's an old school stipulation, huh? If I ever heard of
it. Yeah. 10 lashes. I love it.
So obviously, you know, all the pre-match stuff, getting super heat on the Midnight Express. The Midnight Express end up winning the U.S. Tag Team Championships. They defeat the Fantastics in about 16 minutes and 25 seconds. Very, very a good match here, as you would expect from the Fantastics and the Midnights, who almost seem like they never could have a bad match together, oddly.
Yeah, they used to have great matches. I mean, they were like the Rock and Roll Express with the Midnight Express. I'm sure they've had this match before, the Rock and Roll against the Fantastics. I'm sure that would be a great match.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So the finish came obviously when Beautiful Bobby smacks and beats Bobby Fulton in the head with a chain wrapped around his fist, punches him in the head with the chain. They cheat. They get the win. Tommy Rogers tries to protest after the match, kind of goes for naught as the legendary Tommy Young kind of says the decision stands and the Midnights are the new champions. Of course, kind of makes the Fantastics look good that the Midnights cheated and kind of continues on the feud and doesn't really kill the Fantastics, right? That they right. lost the match, but they lose by cheating.
Right. Gets heat, more heat on the heels and gives the baby faces an out.
And then, of course, they take off Tommy Young's belt. And they end up beating Cornette a little bit, getting some lashes in on Cornette. So at least they had some measure of revenge on Jimmy Cornette and the Midnight Express after the cheating.
Yeah, good.
Do you like Cornette with the 10 lashes? You do like that, huh? You
yeah.
like
that? Yeah. I mean,
the crowd hated him. My God.
Yeah. I mean, they really hated Jimmy. And, it gave the Fantastic a little pizzazz, you know what I mean? Even though they lost, they were smart enough to get the belt and give them a couple of lashes, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Get the emphasis off of them losing.
So next matchup is an interesting one. You're in it. The Tower of Doom match, the three-tiered cage, which is quite an interesting concept here, the triple-decker cage, if you will. Whose idea is this match? Right. This seems crazy. Okay, so where'd you come up with it from?
Because it was supposed to be me against Jimmy. Only me against Jimmy. And Precious was supposed to be in the bottom. And I was supposed to hurt Jimmy in the cage and slowly make my way down to the bottom of the cage, to the ring, and be like a Frankenstein monster stalking her. And then we're supposed to have all these great spots with Patty and Jimmy. But they decided to overload the card with guys that had no idea of our program at all. You know what I mean? That was designed for our program. And I don't know why they ever did it, because it just watered it down. You know, I had broken Jimmy's leg with a cinder block. Did you ever see that?
Yes. Yes, good. Very good gimmick.
Yeah, it looked real as hell. I mean, Jimmy got a special metal thing to put his leg in. I took that cinder block and dropped it. And we had put the cinder block out for a couple of weeks, you know, like it was on TBS. It was part of the background. And when I picked it up, it was like I was just looking for something to stop him, and I picked it up, and Jimmy sold it like he was dead. And we had a lot of heat going in that, and I don't know why they jumped off of it completely, because it made no sense. You know, they didn't have a personal issue with Jimmy. I was...
When you look at it, like this the whole angle, the whole feud, which, right, was you wanted Precious, right? That's kind of the centerpiece of it?
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that's his wife. Jimmy Garvin's going to want to kill you when he's pissed.
Right. And that I was playing mind games with Jimmy, blah, blah, blah. But we had done some vicious stuff on TV, you know what I mean? She actually hit me one time with a crutch that Jimmy was on. When supposedly broke his leg, and I mean, she didn't mean to swing it aside. She probably did. She swung it aside. She couldn't. It hit me right in the head and it busted me open. I was bleeding with my hands down, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So we had done so, and then there was a time she was in the dressing room, afraid of me being in the building, and then all of a sudden, she's not in the building, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So the angle was done very well, but loading guys up on the card that meant nothing. Not that they didn't mean anything, but it meant nothing to the angle. I never understood it.
You're right. It is kind of weird because the whole thing is you and Garvin, but really right. You and Precious is kind of like the whole thing.
Right.
So the match is the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and of course Ron and Jimmy Garvin with Precious versus Al Perez, Ivan Koloff, Mike Rotunda, the Russian Assassin, and yourself, the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, with Gary Hart and Paul Jones on the back, on the sidelines. And the winners of the match are Team Garvin, the Garvins, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and the Road Warriors. The match goes about 20 minutes. Pretty good. I mean, not great, but pretty good for the most part. Way better than Uncensored 96 when Hogan and Savage kind of have to go through the cage, which you were part of as well. You know that very well, which was awful. But it's interesting. So at the end, you kind of almost push Jimmy out and almost give them the win. But that just means that you're alone in the cage with Precious, right? I mean, that's the whole thing, right? You don't care if you lost. The whole thing is, okay, the Garvins win and whatever, but hey, by the way, I'm going to push him out of the cage. Now I'm alone with her. She's right in the cage.
Right.
It kind of makes sense because you're like a maniacal nut. You don't care about winning. You just want Precious.
Right. Right.
Is that like that's the thought process? Like this guy doesn't care about winning and losing.
I want to get her alone. Right. What difference?
Yes.
Like, so if we win or lost, you know, and she was so good at facial expressions at the time. She was a great performer.
And of course, Jimmy Garvin has to go scale all the way up the cage and back down to get back into you. So that was like, I don't know, to me, that was almost better than some of the match. The match isn't bad at all, but that's just, it was cool, like storylines. Like, oh my God, somebody's got to get this sick bastard. We won, but we really didn't win. He got the girl.
Yeah. It was done really well, I thought.
Production-wise, do you think you guys could have done anything better to get the cage set up quicker? Because this does take a while for you guys to get the cage set up.
First of all, I almost thought because it took so long to get put up, and boy, it was swinging a little, JP. That would scare the shit out of me. I mean, Tommy Young was on top, and he was scared to death. I know he had to throw his underwear out, you know what I mean?
He seemed scared, yes.
Yeah. It might have should have been on first to get the cage up and people walking in and seeing it, ooh and ah, and because it did take a long time. It took about 25 minutes, didn't it? Maybe
just about, yeah. Yep, between 20 and 30 minutes, yep.
Yeah, so it went in flat anyway because people waiting so long. So I don't know.
I think that's part of the reason why the U.S. only had a few matches, maybe five matches on the pay-per-view. They're all longer, but setting up that cage took basically the length of a whole match.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if they ever, it scares me now, but I'm not sure if they ever set that up until they set it up for the match.
Really? So they're not very experienced in setting it up, which also led to the time.
Yeah. And it was very difficult. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
the Garvin-Sullivan feud continues, basically. They get the win, but you kind of almost got the last laugh.
Right, right. I've really enjoyed working with Jimmy.
What is it about, like, Jimmy Garvin? Because you were saying he was almost NWA champion. Do you think that, you know, he had the charisma and the potential and the wrestling ability to be world champion? I mean, you obviously like working with him. A lot of guys like working with him.
Jimmy had one of the most positive personalities I was ever around. I remember one time we were in Fort Lauderdale. We were both young baby faces, and we stayed at a hotel, and we ordered Chinese food, we had drinks, we went swimming, everything. Jimmy is a very positive guy. I used to go scuba diving with Jimmy quite a bit. Jimmy was a guy that really enjoyed life. Really enjoy life. I think he lives in the Caribbean half a year.
Wow. Good for him.
It might be Costa Rica, but he lives on the beach, so that's nice.
So next up is Barry Windham with James J. Dillon versus Dusty Rhodes for the NWA United States Championship. Of course, Barry Windham is the champion. Interesting that Dusty Rhodes really was Barry Windham's mentor, if you really look at it. Then, of course, Windham turns heel. He joins the Four Horsemen, and then, obviously, that's the lead-up for this match. Do you like that? I mean, that's pretty deep, and not that Windham is the main event-level guy. Flair is of the Horsemen, but still, him and Dusty, that kind of leads you to almost main event-level feud here.
Oh, he was, by that time, let me see, 88. Yeah. I remember, I think I ran it to Barry in 80 when he first started. I believe he started in 80. When I was working in Georgia, they sent me down to Jacksonville for a show, and I remember he was working with Dickie Murdoch. So he had been around, didn't he? Barry was a natural, one of the greatest performers I've ever seen. Probably the best babyface, technically, I ever worked with.
Wow, high praise. Big time high praise there.
Yeah.
So Barry Windham, shockingly maybe here, ends up getting the victory. He beats Dusty Rhodes in 16 minutes to retain his United States Championship. Not really a bad match at all. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it. So winner and still U.S. champion Barry Windham. The reason he was able to win, Ronnie Garvin comes out, turns heel, turns on Dusty, and knocks him out, allowing Windham to get the victory. You like the heel turn here for Ronnie Garvin on Dusty?
I didn't understand that. He had just come off winning the world title, right?
Basically, in late 87, yeah. Yep.
I just didn't understand that. It was, I don't know. I just didn't like it.
I asked Ronnie about it. A few years ago when I interviewed him, and he was even like perplexed. He kind of didn't like it and he didn't get it. I mean, he goes along with it and does like the evil laugh, and James J. Dillon in the back pays him a boatload of money and he's excited. But it seemed like he didn't really care for it too much because basically, you know, he's off to the WWF not too far after this.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was liking the turn really that much, but it felt like, I don't know. Gary Hart becomes his heel manager for a little bit during the run. Something just didn't fit there with that turn, and I didn't really like it. And obviously, Ronnie Garvin didn't like it either.
Yeah.
So finally, the main event of the evening, Ric Flair versus Lex Luger for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Of course, Ric Flair is with the aforementioned James J. Dillon. Pretty good match. Pretty solid match overall. Obviously, Flair has to do a lot of carrying here. I mean, Luger's good. He looks like $1 million, but obviously Flair is the ring general. Luger's still a little bit green here in 1988. After being a horseman the year before, he turns babyface, and obviously the natural feud is to feud with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Ric Flair will win via referee stoppage in 23 minutes and 15 seconds to retain the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. The end saw basically Luger is bleeding. He puts him in the torture rack. The crowd's going crazy. They think he's going to win. The ref calls for the bell. He says, no, it's a ref stoppage due to the blood, not due to any sort of tap out by Ric Flair. Do you like this?
It wasn't a referee telling him he stopped it. I went to Commissioner O'Sullivan, who is an old guy, and Dusty was saying, that's, you know, we came up with the finish together. And he said, yeah, we can't get this past O'Sullivan because the Baltimore Athletic Commission was so strong. And they were paying the asses. But he was the head commissioner, and he was there that night. And I said to Gary Juster, who was the promoter of record, I'll get this passed. He said, no, you won't. And if you ever see Gary, have him tell you the story. I went to him, and his name was Chester. I said, Chester, can I have a minute with you? He said, yeah. He said, what do you want to talk about? I said, well, Chester, before I ask you this question, I just want to let you know one of the saddest moments in my family's history was when we dropped the O. I mean, the O means house of, and I don't think these roundbacks, that's what they call second generation Irish that come over, understand what that means. Blah, blah, blah. He says, got the bullshit. What do you want? I said, I want to do this finish, and I told him. He said, okay, I'm going to pull all my guys before the main event. This is the only time you're going to get it done. So I got it done.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
But it's not like Luger was bleeding crazy here. It was like kind of like a minor cut rather than that huge like Crimson Mask where they're completely blood covered everywhere.
Yeah, but they had been educated in Baltimore because guys would get cracked open by mistake. You know what I mean? Running into posts and stuff. So it didn't take long. They were really, really on top of it in Baltimore. Because it was a strong athletic commission. You got to realize that New York, Massachusetts, and Maryland were a very strong athletic commission. When Jimmy Ellis was the champion, right? The boxing world champion?
Mm-hmm.
They recognized Joe Frazier, those three states, as the world champion. And they did it quite a bit. In the middleweight division, they recognized one time welterweight Paul Pender rather than whoever was, rather than Rocky, maybe there wasn't Rocky, I think it was Emil Griffin. So they had a very, very strong influence, those three states, the athletic commission.
And it kind of the Starrcade 1984 finish with Flair and Dusty all over again, where the guy's bleeding and, you know, they're going to, you think one guy's winning, goes another, and Flair is able to return, I mean, to retain the title. So very interesting that Flair kind of, you know, basically by the skin of his teeth is able to retain the title when he was about to lose.
Right.
You like that for heat purposes? Like that real
Flair is going to beat? I love that because if you, I think most wrestling fans may not be huge boxing fans, but they've watched it and they understand the best. The one I always think about, the blood, Henry Cooper and Ali, right? When Henry Cooper had knocked him down in the fourth round. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then he gets up and he doesn't know where he was. He got knocked down with about 4 seconds left to go in the round. And when he got up, he didn't even know where he was. And then the next round, he came up and split Henry Cooper badly. You know what I mean? So it kind of made Cooper a hero in England because of that. And then he got another fight with Ali, and the same thing happened. But I think, you know, at one time, we were a lot closer cousins, boxing and wrestling, than we are today.
With Luger, do you think he wasn't ready to, just like Sting we talked about earlier, wasn't ready to be champion yet?
Yeah. He was nowhere. Sting was way ahead of him at this period.
So Sting wins the title Great American Bash 1990. Luger wins his first title Great American Bash 91 when Flair leaves for the WWF, and he ends up winning the vacant WCW World Heavyweight Championship. So it's interesting. All these big names at Great American Bash are, you know, through the history are getting their first title wins at the Great American Bash.
Right. Good place. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Bash, yeah.
So Sting, Nikita, and Luger were celebrating, thinking that Luger had won the title, but now they're obviously pissed off and enraged at the decision because Luger is not the champion, even though they thought he was. Do you like that, too? Like, really, really kind of hammering at home that you're teasing that Luger was going to be the champ? It seemed like a lot of people were pissed.
Yeah, and that's what you want them to be, is pissed. I mean, I think it's anytime it's hard to get heat, and anytime you can really get people pissed at you, I happen to like it. You know, it's like, let's go back. I'm gonna wave my fingers at people, right? John, they look a lot smarter as time goes on.
Of course,
9 million people without wrestling.
Yep.
What would have happened?
Monday morning quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they don't understand heat. Listen, think about this. The greatest performer and the guy that had the highest Q rating, meaning everybody knew who he was.
Yep.
What athlete was that? Can you tell me?
Any wrestling wise? Definitely Hogan.
No. I mean, as any athlete.
Oh, Tom Brady?
No. Ali.
Oh, Muhammad Ali, of course. Okay.
Where did Ali get a stick from? Pro wrestler. Gorgeous George. What did George do? Get our heat. Why did people come to see Ali? To win? No. To get his ass kicked.
Get his ass kicked.
Brother, all these people, I keep on chuckling about this, and I happen to really like Cody, and I figure that he'll win it on the next WrestleMania. But that wasn't the time, because it would have really hurt him, because of the Sami Zayn and everybody else had a chance, and they came close, and then here comes the kid that a lot of people look at him and got a silver spoon in his mouth, and he beats him, Roman Reigns. It would have been hard for him, and they certainly wouldn't have been drawn as great an interview as Cody is. Could he have drawn 3 million for 45 or 35 minutes?
Nope.
With no wrestling?
Probably not.
Probably not. I'm going to tell you, I bet you a dollar to a donut he wouldn't have done it. So they're saying, I remember them talking about, what a bad call. I think my hats are off to Hunter. I've been around some smart guys, but I got to take into consideration everything he's done and where they were before he took over. He may be the smartest guy I ever heard of.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I praise there. Jeez.
The best. He might be the best of all times to go with his gut like he did and then keep on going with it. And you know why I think he could do that? Because he's an old school wrestling fan. When the belts meant something. I mean, I love it when they say, well, he's had 3 years, that's too long in this day and age. Excuse me? You know what I mean? The Patriots, Tom Brady, was in the, every other year he was in the Super Bowl for 20 years. You know what I mean? There's a thing about people like to see winners. And once you get something like that, and Hunter sticking to his guns and not panicking and having the balls, this is balls, brother. You go to Madison Square Garden, which has seen everybody, Bruno, I mean, anybody's been to Madison Square Garden. Then you go on and do something for 30, 40 minutes with no wrestling, and they draw 3 million. And the people start singing his song, and they're outside serenading him. Pretty strong. So that's why I think maybe Hunter's the smartest guy I've ever seen.
Doing a pretty remarkable job right now. I mean, they're definitely way better than they were. They were dead for you could make an argument like 20 years they sucked, and they've been really good the last few years of Roman on top. So
yeah,
pretty amazing. As far as this pay-per-view, thumbs in the middle, or where do you got Great American Bash 88?
I say in the middle.
Tower of Doom, interesting. It's quite the spectacle. Flair, Luger had a lot of heat in the end for sure. A few good tag matches in the mix. And obviously, Ronnie Garvin's weird heel turn. I'm still questioning it today. Yeah.
Yeah, I am too. But I guess it was in the middle.
All right. Let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2ManPowerTrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, obviously, you can follow you on Instagram at TaskmasterTalks. What else is going on?
I'm going to be at the Gathering in Charlotte in a couple of weeks, so come by and see me. I'm doing me, Steve Kern, Bob Roop, Briscoe and Brian Blair are doing something on Championship Wrestling from Florida on Thursday night. So you'll be able to ask us questions and we're going to tell stories. So I'm really looking forward to our fans coming up and saying hello to us, JP.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler Approved.